Hi, welcome to our growth summary of What Everybody Is Saying by Joe Navarro. This is a guide to understanding body language written by a former FBI agent. The book offers science-backed insights to help you communicate better and read people's nonverbal signals to understand their true thoughts and feelings. So, on Amazon, this book has 4.6 stars, and on Goodreads, it has 3.9 stars. People like it's a comprehensive body language guide. They like it's written by an FBI expert, and that there are many practical examples of how to use it. Some criticism includes there's repetitive content. It's not very deeply scientific. It's more based on his experience and some science, and it can feel oversimplified. So, who is the author? Joe Navarro served as an FBI agent for 25 years, specializing in counterintelligence and behavioral analysis. He's now recognized as one of the world's leading experts on nonverbal communication and body language. Besides writing a few books now, he's a sought-after speaker and consultant, providing training to law enforcement agencies, businesses, and the public. If you want to learn how to read body language from an FBI expert, then What Everybody Is Saying by this author, Joe Navarro, is a must-read book. It dives into the fascinating secret world of understanding nonverbal communication, offering lots of practical insights and techniques from his quarter decade of experience. So whether you're looking to improve your communication skills, show more confidence, or detect when someone is lying, this book provides the tools you need. So in this summary, we'll cover what every chapter says and then the key takeaways in detail so you can grasp the essential strategies and start applying them in your daily life. Okay, so the first section, we're going to do a summary by chapter. So there's going to be every chapter of this book explained in just a few minutes in total. It's going to give you a quick overview of the key concepts and lessons. And so let's start with the chapter one summary. In the first chapter, Joe Navarro explains how he had to learn nonverbal communication quickly when he came to America from Cuba at the age of 8. So he began learning it out of necessity to identify friendly behaviors from unfriendly ones in a strange new place. So that's how he got started very early on. Now, nonverbal communication, what is it? It's conveying information to other people using your facial expressions, gestures, touch, posture, clothing, voice, and a lot of other signals we'll talk about. It makes up about 65% of our communication and is often more honest than words because we can't tightly control it. Now, the 10 commandments of understanding body language in this book are number 1, observe carefully, 2, understand behaviors in context, 3, recognize behaviors that are universal to all people, 4, identify a person's unique tells, like what body language signs they're prone to give off when they feel a certain way, number 5, establish their baseline behaviors, how they feel when they're comfortable and normal. 6, look for clusters of cues, not just one by itself. 7, notice sudden changes in body language. 8, recognize false cues. 9, distinguish signs of comfort and discomfort. That may actually be the most important commandment here. And number 10, be subtle when observing. Now the chapter 2 summary. So the second chapter explains the three brain model, that we all have these inner brains, an inner reptilian, mammalian, and then human brain. The limbic brain, that's the middle one, the mammalian brain, it reacts instantly and automatically, making our nonverbal reactions hard to control or hide from people. So our nonverbal communication happens underneath the conscious level of our thinking most of the time. Next point is freeze, flight, or fight. These are our main limbic responses from that limbic brain when we are faced with a threat or something that stresses us. So first we freeze. Maybe we try to block out the stress, such as by closing our eyes. That's flight, get away from it. Or we become aggressive. And today we often do this by arguing rather than physical contact. Next, comfort and discomfort are the key to understanding body language. You see, when we're stressed, we exhibit what are called pacifying behaviors, like touching our neck or our face to calm ourselves down. And so you can learn a lot simply by paying attention to whether someone is comfortable or uncomfortable at this moment. Look for those pacifying behaviors, which we'll talk about, and for sudden changes from comfort to discomfort. Chapter 3. He says, feet are more honest than faces. We can often control facial expressions, but usually neglect to notice what our feet are communicating to others. As an example, when Joe Navarro was interviewing someone for the FBI, their feet were often the first place he looked, even making sure tables were moved aside so that the feet could not be hidden. Foot movement and position also reveal our emotions. As an example, our feet wiggle when we're happy, our feet point towards what we like and away from what we dislike. We may spread legs as a territorial sign or a sign of confidence, and we cross our legs when we're comfortable or during courtship. Chapter 4 summary. Our torso position also reveals our emotions and comfort level. There's something called a torso lean. We lean towards people and things we like, and we lean away or turn our body to the side away from people or things that we dislike. Torso shield. That means we use our arms to protect our torso when we feel threatened or challenged. Although some people do simply cross their arms out of comfort, so it's important to tell the difference. Also, some people splay out their torso when they feel comfortable or confident. Another thing is the turtle effect. That means our shoulders rise up towards our ears when we're feeling insecure or negative. To imagine this, think of a losing sports team walking off the field with their shoulders raised up towards their ears. Chapter 5 summary. Our arms signal our current mood and social status. And there's a few ways they do this. Arm movement. When we have free-flowing arm movements, that shows we're feeling good, while restricted arms suggest discomfort, or maybe we're trying to be unnoticed. And the author says you often see this in shoplifters or perhaps abused children. When they're near their abuser, they restrict their arm movements. Arm position. Many people take up more space with their arms as a territorial display to establish a position of power at the table, like a man draping his arm over the next chair in a business meeting. Another position that's used by police officers and other authority figures to assert dominance is called arms akimbo, when they hold their hands on their hips, thumbs facing backwards. Chapter 6. Our hands and fingers are powerful communicators and command a disproportionate amount of people's attention. Effective speakers use hand gestures to emphasize their points very effectively. When someone's hands are hidden underneath a table, it can feel uncomfortable to us, like they're trying to hide something from us. Here are some high-confidence hand gestures. First, we have steepled hands. That's when your fingertips of both hands are spread and touching each other. That communicates a high degree of certainty. While having your thumbs showing from your pockets suggests high status and positivity. Now a few low-confidence hand gestures. Hand movements that are frozen or constricted. There's also hand wringing or rubbing hands against each other. That's a sign of stress. Thumbs hidden in pockets. So these will indicate weakness or stress, low confidence. Indications of even stronger anxiety include nail biting, sweaty palms, and hands shaking. Now chapter 7. It's about our faces. which are able to communicate micro-expressions, more subtle feelings than most other parts of our body. However, people have the most practice lying with their facial expressions, which makes reading faces a little more tricky. Muscle tension is the main thing to look for in the face. You see, when we feel negative emotions like discomfort or fear, then our muscles tighten. Some examples: jaw clenching, eyes squinting, a furrowed brow. On the other hand, when we feel positive, then our facial muscles relax. And when we're most comfortable, we may even tilt our head to one side. Here are some eye behaviors. Our pupils, that black part in the middle of our eye, that enlarges when we're momentarily surprised or when we like what we see. Like when we look at our partner that we find attractive. We also tend to block our eyes when we don't like something. Like someone might close their eyes for a few seconds when hearing bad news. The blinking rate of our eyes increases for a few seconds when we're feeling troubled, but also aroused. Chapter 8. This chapter focuses on detecting deception. It's mainly a recap of ideas the book covered in previous chapters, with a greater focus on identifying when someone is lying. So he says the main thing to look for is that limbic arousal, that increased emotional response that is triggered when someone's feeling discomfort, and look for that in response to a specific question or topic that you ask or bring up. So the author's process when interviewing someone for the FBI, he says first, you must establish a comfortable environment where the person feels relaxed. That allows you to gauge their baseline behavior, how their normal body language is. And then you can ask pointed questions and pay attention for reactions that signal discomfort in response to what you've said. You can look especially for those pacifying behaviors that people do to soothe stress, like touching their face and neck. And that doesn't say they're lying automatically, but it does say that they're uncomfortable with the topic and it's probably worth more exploration, so you get them to expand on it. And our final chapter 9 summary. In this final chapter, Joe tells a quick story that's really a clever analogy. He says his friend was driving in an unfamiliar city in Florida, and he was lost because he didn't see any street signs. So he stopped to ask for directions from a local person, who pointed out that the street signs in that city were actually just a few inches from the ground, rather than high up on signs. And so once the friend knew where to look, he could navigate the city effortlessly. And Navarro says, this is just like learning body language. When we know what nonverbal signs we should be looking for, then we can navigate social interactions with much greater effectiveness. All right, now I want to connect this to another fantastic book that's about negotiation, and that one is called Never Split the Difference by Chris Voss, who was also with the FBI. He was there for 24 years and became their lead hostage negotiator. So that author says that when we negotiate, quote, the goal is to identify what your counterparts actually need, monetarily, emotionally, or otherwise, and get them feeling safe enough to talk and talk and talk some more about what they want, end quote. So you see a similar idea here with this author saying you want to get people feeling safe and then observe for signs of discomfort. So Chris Voss also talks about comfort and discomfort as a key part of negotiation. And you can learn a lot more negotiation secrets in our summary of his book, Never Split the Difference, on Growth Summary. Okay, now a quick quiz question. According to Joe Navarro, understanding nonverbal behavior should focus on which two key areas? Is it A, happiness and sadness, B, openness and closed-mindedness, C, comfort and discomfort, or D, confidence and insecurity? And the correct answer is C, comfort and discomfort. So now we're going to be moving on to a deep dive into the best big practical ideas and key takeaways from this book. And that brings us to lesson two, comfort versus discomfort. To understand what someone's body language means, ask yourself if they seem at ease or stressed. So here's a quick summary of the lesson. Body language signals generally fall into two broad categories, comfort versus discomfort. Signs of discomfort often include leaning away from someone, facial tension, and they're often followed by pacifying behaviors like touching their face or neck. Recognizing these kinds of signs of discomfort or stress can help you better understand a person's true feelings and reactions much better. So when you're trying to decode someone's body language, the most important thing is to determine whether they're displaying signs that represent comfort or discomfort. So this is a basic distinction that will guide you. It'll give you the biggest clue ever about a person's emotional state and what they're communicating unconsciously or below their conscious thinking. So there are comfort signals, like a relaxed posture and open gesture that suggests the person feels at ease. On the other hand, there are discomfort signals, such as leaning away or facial tension, which indicates stress or unease. And one important aspect of this, which we just mentioned, is to look out for pacifying behaviors. These are actions people use to self-soothe themselves, to get back to feeling calm when they've been stressed. The most common pacifying behaviors, says Navarro, involve touching the face and neck. For instance, a person might rub their neck or touch their face when they feel uneasy about a question that you just asked or a topic that you brought up. There's a notable example from Joe Navarro's experience as an FBI agent, which illustrates this well. While he was searching for a wanted suspect, Navarro questioned the suspect's mother because they believed her son was hiding in her home. And although she denied knowing her son's whereabouts, whenever he asked about her son, she repeatedly touched her suprasternal notch. That's the small dip we all have at the base of our throat. And that is a clear sign of discomfort. Navarro says women are especially likely to touch that part of the neck. And this behavior hinted at her unease, eventually leading to the suspect's discovery in a closet in her home, so she did know he was there. Now, detecting deception. It's what a lot of people want to hear when it comes to body language, but this author says it's particularly challenging because the signs of lying are often identical to signs that the person is simply stressed out. And so traditional body language books might suggest that when someone touches their nose, that indicates lying, but this author says that can also be a general response to discomfort. Like you ask them a question and they touch their nose, that doesn't mean they're lying, they might have just felt a little bit uncomfortable with the topic of the question for some other reason. So when you're trying to learn the honest truth from someone, Navarro recommends establishing a baseline of comfort first. By getting someone to relax first, then you can better identify changes in their body language when specific questions or topics are introduced. And so unlike what some Hollywood movies might show, he does not recommend interviewing someone or interrogating someone in an aggressive or accusatory way, because that just makes them get defensive, maybe stressed out, even if they're innocent. And so they're more likely to do those behaviors of discomfort and those pacifying behaviors simply because they're feeling uncomfortable from how you're asking the question. But when you get them to relax, then you can get that baseline, and then you can more clearly see whether specific questions or topics get them a little bit uncomfortable. Now, if they do exhibit a sign of discomfort or a pacifying behavior, like touching their neck after a question, it does not automatically mean they're lying, but it does mean that the topic might be worth exploring further. So understanding these kinds of nuances helps in accurately interpreting someone's body language and distinguishing between mere stress and potential deceit. Now, I'm going to connect this to another great book. The concept of observing comfort versus discomfort in body language connects well with Law Number 48 from the book The 48 Laws of Power by Robert Greene. And law number 48 in that book is called Be Like Water. What is that all about? Well, by understanding and adapting to others' nonverbal signals, you can stay more flexible and unpredictable in your interactions. By recognizing when someone is stressed or at ease, that allows you to adjust your behavior and strategy dynamically, maintaining greater influence and control in various situations. This kind of adaptability helps you flow with the circumstances and respond effectively to the subtle cues around you. Here's an example from this book. When Joe Navarro is now consulting for a major organization in a business to help them negotiate a deal, he may ask the other side to read an important contract they're working on line by line. So while that person is reading the contract, he is secretly looking for signs of tension or dislike in their face, such as their eyes squinting at a certain clause. And that tells him that that specific line of the contract might need further discussion or clarification or renegotiation. And in this way, he's able to greatly increase the chances of a successful business deal for everyone involved. So that's a great way to apply this knowledge. And if you want to learn more about human dynamics, go read our summary of the 48 Laws of Power by Robert Greene on Growth Summary. Here's another quiz question. Which of the following is a common sign of discomfort? Is it A, leaning forward, B, facial tension, C, maintaining eye contact, or D, an upright posture? The correct answer is B, facial tension. Next we have lesson 3, freeze, flight, fight. The three automatic reactions of our limbic brain to sources of discomfort, stress, or threat. Quick summary, the limbic brain controls our automatic reactions, our nonverbal communication, and that makes it hard to conceal those reactions. This author says our reactions can be categorized into three types, freeze, flight, and fight. And that means initially we freeze when we feel threatened, followed by the urge to escape in various ways, that's flight. And finally, we may engage in non-physical forms of confrontation, that's fighting. So the limbic brain is a fascinating part of our biology. It's responsible for so many of our instinctive reactions to things. It operates automatically, making our responses, our instinctive responses, hard to hide from other people. And our automatic reactions to threats or discomfort often fall into three main types. It's freezing, flight, or fight. Most of us have heard of fight or flight reaction before, but the freeze one is actually the most common, says this author. When we first perceive a threat, our first instinct is generally to freeze. This response dates back to evolution. When our ancestors needed to avoid being seen by a sudden predator, we would freeze because most predators can most quickly detect movement. Now, although we no longer face dangerous wild animals in our daily lives, this reaction still occurs when we feel a source of stress. For example, during his time with the FBI, Navarro often observed suspects freezing when suddenly confronted with evidence of their guilt of a crime. Similarly, people under stress, like shoplifters, may try to make themselves less noticeable by taking up less space, moving their arms less. It's a type of freezing. On a darker note, abused children will do the same thing, especially when near their abuser. They'll hold their arms more tightly by their sides and kind of freeze up. So the next type of reaction is flight. While we can't always physically run away from our problems today, we still exhibit behaviors that try to distance us from the source of discomfort. That can include leaning away from someone or something we dislike, or closing our eyes when we hear something unpleasant. Many of these behaviors are called blocking behaviors, as they help us to block out the source of our stress. Finally, there's the fight response. Now, in modern times, this usually manifests as arguing or other forms of non-physical confrontation. We can be aggressive non-physically by raising our voice, by invading someone's personal space, or making ourselves appear bigger. raising our chest. In all these ways, we can assert ourselves in kind of a fight reaction. However, Navarro advises against such aggression because it clouds people's judgments and prevents us from thinking clearly. So understanding these main categories of reactions, that can help us better read other people's body language and also manage our own reactions in stressful situations. By recognizing when someone is in those states of freeze, flight, or fight, we can adjust our approach to communicate more effectively and empathetically, perhaps getting them feeling safe again so the lines of communication can open up. Now, I think these ideas are echoed in the book Behave. That's a book on the biological mechanisms behind human behavior, and it's written by the Stanford professor and scientist Robert Sapolsky. That author wrote, quote, "The brain region most involved in feeling afraid and anxious is also most involved in generating aggression," end quote. This insight aligns with Navarro's explanation in this book that our initial reaction to threat is often freezing, followed by the flight response to distance ourselves from the stressor, and finally the fight response, which manifests as different types of aggression. Both authors highlight how fear and anxiety can quickly shift into aggressive behaviors driven by the same brain mechanisms. So you can learn more about human behavior and our psychology and neuroscience in our summary of the book Behave by Robert Sapolsky. Now here's a quiz question. Which of the following is an example of a blocking behavior? Is it A, closing our eyes, B, clenching fists, C, raising our voices, or D, standing still? Correct answer is A, closing eyes. And that brings us to lesson 4, honest feet. People's feet and legs often reveal their true intentions because they're less consciously controlled. Quick summary, people's feet and legs are the least deceptive parts of their body, often revealing true intentions because they're less consciously controlled. We don't think about them as often. Common signs in this section include bouncing our feet indicates joy, our feet point towards what we like, and splaying out our legs shows territoriality. So our feet and legs, we're less likely to control what they're doing, and that's why this author calls them the most honest parts of our body. From a young age, we learn to manage our words and facial expressions to convey a certain message, such as smiling out of politeness, but we rarely really notice what our feet are doing, and that makes them a very reliable source of nonverbal cues. One example of this is called happy feet, where a person's feet wiggle or bounce with joy. This can be seen in situations like lovers reuniting, or a child excited about a trip to Disneyland, or a poker player with a great hand. The author says he saw that on TV one time. However, it's important to note that this behavior of bouncing feet can also indicate nervousness or impatience, such as when students are fidgeting near the end of a class. Now, the direction in which our feet point is another telling sign. Our feet tend to turn towards things or people we like and away from those we dislike. For instance, if you join a conversation and notice that two people have only turned their waist towards you while their feet remain pointed away from you towards each other, that's probably a sign they might prefer to be left alone to talk to each other. Similarly, if someone in a conversation starts turning one foot away from you, it indicates disengagement or a desire to leave, possibly because they don't want to talk to you, or maybe they're just in a hurry, they have another appointment to go to. Legs can also communicate a territorial display, such as when a person's legs are spread far apart when they're standing, which is called leg splaying. Law enforcement officers often use leg splay to convey authority and control. Navarro has sometimes coached female officers to use this kind of pose rather than standing with their feet together, which can be a sign of submissiveness. Now, a variation of this is the arms akimbo posture, where hands are placed on hips with elbows out in a V shape. You'll often see police standing that way. Some signs can convey high comfort, such as when we cross our legs while standing in someone's presence, because it puts us off balance, so we have to be comfortable around that person to stand with our legs crossed. Another example is when two people's legs and feet mirror the other person's position. That's known as mirroring or isopraxis, and it indicates they feel in rapport or harmony with each other. Here's a quiz question. If someone's feet are pointed away from you in a conversation, what does that indicate? Is it A, interest, B, comfort, C, excitement, or D, disengagement? Unfortunately, the answer is D, disengagement. Next, we have lesson 5, safety and dominance. Our arms and torso send strong signals about when we feel defensive, dominant, or interested. Quick summary, our arms and torso communicate strong messages. When we're threatened, our limbic brain protects vital organs with defensive behaviors like raising our shoulders, turtle effect, or covering ourselves with our arms. Feeling dominant makes us take up more space. Interest or liking something or someone makes us lean in, and dislike makes us lean away. So this author says our bodies instinctively protect vital areas of our body when we feel threatened or challenged. And again, this is driven by that limbic brain built by evolution. This involves using our arms and torso as shields, similar to how people automatically raise their hands to defend against an attacker. And that even results in wounds on the arms being known by law enforcement as being defense wounds. That's what they call them because it's so common to defend ourselves by raising our arms. Some examples of defensive behaviors that signal someone feels threatened include crossing arms, restricting their arm movements, and raising their shoulders towards their ears, which the author labels the turtle effect. These kinds of behaviors also tend to signal insecurity or weakness. We should be careful, however, because there are some people who simply enjoy crossing their arms, which is why it's so important to make note of an individual's baseline behavior of what they do when they feel comfortable. Now, the direction that our torso is pointing can also reveal our feelings towards people or things. We tend to lean towards what we like and find interesting and lean away from things we dislike. You can picture two lovers at a cafe, leaning forward towards each other, which indicates their affection. Conversely, if someone turns their body slightly away to the side, it often signifies discomfort or dislike. Dominance and authority are also expressed through arm and torso movements, taking up more space, such as spreading one's arms out, draping an arm over a chair, or doing the hooding effect. That's where a person leans back and interlaces their hands behind their head, like during a meeting. All of these forms of taking up more space signal relaxation and confidence and authority in that situation. Here's another quiz question. Which of the following is a defensive behavior signaling someone may feel threatened? Is it A, smiling slightly, B, restricting arm movements, C, nodding slowly, or D, making eye contact? Correct answer here is B, restricting arm movements. And now we have lesson 6, hands and confidence. Hands can indicate openness, honesty, and confidence, or the opposite, deceit and discomfort. So hands are key indicators of a person's emotional state and their intentions. Signs of confidence include steepling of hands, thumbs pointing upwards, and thumbs sticking out of pockets. Signs of discomfort include nail biting, sweaty hands, or more subtly, hand wringing and thumbs in pockets. There are also universally offensive hand gestures, including finger pointing and snapping fingers. So let's dive deeper into all those. Our hands can be incredibly expressive and reveal a lot about our emotions and intentions. They play a significant role in communication, as we tend to pay a disproportionate amount of attention to people's hands in communication. In fact, when someone is speaking but their hands are hidden under a table, that can often make us feel uncomfortable, can't it? As if they're hiding something. Understanding hand signals can greatly enhance your ability to read people. Recognizing signs of confidence can help you appear more certain in what you're saying, while spotting signs of discomfort can alert you to potential stress or deceit in other people. So when it comes to displaying confidence, one of the most powerful gestures here is steepling of the hands. That's where the fingertips of both your hands are spread out and touching each other. That gesture shows certainty in what someone is saying and is often used by confident speakers or executives. This author says a lawyer can even coach their witnesses in court to use this kind of gesture to appear more certain in what they're saying. So another sign of confidence or positivity in someone is when their thumbs are pointing upward. And that indicates positive thoughts. Now, we're not talking about making a thumbs up sign when people just have their hands open, but their thumbs are pointing towards the sky. Also, having thumbs sticking out of pockets, that is a common display among high status individuals like former US President JFK. On the flip side, here are some signs of stress and nervousness in hands and hand movements. People who are lying or under stress tend to gesture less and have more restrained hand movements, as if they don't want to draw attention to themselves, or they may not have as much emphasis, physical emphasis, in what they're saying because they don't really believe in it. Some other signs of discomfort include hand wringing or rubbing one's hands together. That's like a clear pacifying behavior used to self-soothe when someone feels worried. This author says he often sees it in people testifying before Congress. Now, some hand gestures are almost universally offensive around the world, including pointing your finger at people. It's often seen as being rude and aggressive, and this author says that gesture tends to escalate tensions, and finger pointing usually precedes a fight breaking out in a prison. Navarro also says snapping your fingers at someone is one of the rudest things you can do. It makes people feel insignificant. It's the kind of behavior you would do to call your dog over. Well, let's think about it. What is the opposite of that kind of gesture? Probably using that person's name. Because remembering someone's name makes them feel important, which is a core human need. So I'm going to connect this to another great book, probably the most recommended book on people skills ever written. Must be the classic book, How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie. So in that book, the third major principle is to remember a person's name. That author writes, "Remember that a person's name is to that person the sweetest and most important sound in any language." And he mentions plenty of examples from history, from presidents like Franklin D. Roosevelt to business magnates like Andrew Carnegie, who went out of their way to remember thousands of people's first names and attributed a great deal of their success to that habit. So you can read more about that in our summary of How to Win Friends and Influence People. Now here's another quiz question. Which of the following is a sign of confidence? A. Crossing arms. B. Avoiding eye contact. C. Steepling of hands. Or D. Thumbs in pockets. Correct answer here is C. Steepling of hands. That brings us to lesson 7, eyes and liking. Our eyes and facial expressions reveal the widest range of human emotions, including like and dislike. So a quick summary, positive emotions relax facial muscles, they dilate or open our pupils up, and can make us tilt our head, while negative emotions cause facial tension, they constrict or close our pupils, and they compress our lips into a line. Let's dive deeper into this now. Our faces and eyes are powerful communicators of our emotions. See, there are countless tiny muscles in our face that produce such a wide range of expressions, revealing our true feelings even when we try to hide them. For instance, negative emotions such as discomfort or fear often make us tense, leading to signs like a tightened jaw, squinting our eyes, and a furrowed brow. Look for wrinkles in people's faces to see tension. You can almost imagine the stern expression of Clint Eastwood in one of his old Western movies to think about what facial tension looks like in someone. Another clear sign someone is distressed is having compressed lips. That's when their lips become a thin line and may even point downwards at the edges. Other signs are pursed lips, which indicate disagreement. Lip licking can be a pacifying behavior because stress can cause dry mouth. Now, on the other hand, positive emotions tend to relax our facial muscles. When we feel comfortable, we might even tilt our head slightly, a gesture commonly seen in moments of courtship or affection. Now, our eyes in particular give away a lot. Let's begin with our pupils, the black part in the middle of our eye. They dilate or increase in size when we like what we see, and they do that in order to let more light in, so we see more of what we like. When we see something we don't like, our pupils tend to constrict. They get smaller. Other signs include a quick eyebrow raise, shows that we're pleasantly surprised. Eye gazing, looking into people's eyes, that can indicate love, curiosity, but also threat, depending on the context. You see, lovers are known to gaze into each other's eyes, and mothers do it with their kids, but also predators do the same thing with their prey, making strong eye contact, so it all depends on the context. Now, eye-blocking behaviors can be particularly telling. For example, when someone's eyes squint, when they get narrower, it's likely they've encountered something they don't like. Similarly, when we close our eyes for a few seconds or cover them with a hand, that's a common response to hearing bad news or distressing information. Blinking patterns can also reveal our emotional state. We tend to blink more frequently when we're troubled or nervous, but also aroused, and blink less frequently when we're feeling relaxed. So if you notice that someone just began blinking rapidly a few times after you said something, it could be a sign that they're uncomfortable with what they just heard. Lastly, the position of the chin can tell us a lot about someone's confidence level. A chin held down suggests low confidence or they're feeling adversity, while a chin held up indicates positive feelings and high confidence, perhaps even arrogance on the extreme end. It's no wonder the phrase "keep your chin up" is associated with maintaining a positive attitude. So here's a quiz question. Which of the following is a sign of positive emotions? A. Head tilt. B. Compressed lips. C. Pupil constriction. Or D. Facial tension. Correct answer is A. Head tilt. Now let's finish up with a few action steps. These are suggestions on how we could apply this book to our lives, starting today, step by step. Action step one is to observe comfort. In conversations, quickly assess if the person seems at ease or stressed, and adjust your approach accordingly. Two, identify reactions. Notice your own freeze, flight, or fight responses in stressful situations. Practice deep breathing or mindfulness to stay calm and grounded. 3. Watch feet direction. Observe the direction of people's feet during interactions to gauge their interest or discomfort. If they're pointed away from you, the person may be disinterested. 4. Use open posture. Keep your arms open and avoid crossing them to project confidence. Take up more space with your body to show authority when needed, using splayed legs and the arms akimbo stance. 5. Practice confident gestures. Use hand gestures like steepling fingers or open palms or thumbs facing towards the sky. Avoid hiding your thumbs in your pockets or rubbing your hands together. 6. Look for facial tension. During a negotiation, look out for facial tension in response to specific sections of the contract or the deal, which indicates they don't like that part of it. Signs of tension include eyes squinting, pursed lips, rapid blinking, etc. Okay, I hope you got a lot out of this summary, and I'll see you in the next one.